No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this 27th day of March 2020. I'm David Brown. Great to have you join us on this Friday, wrapping up a week that has certainly been memorable for a lot of young Texans, finishing their first 5 days of education by teleconference or something similar. More on how they're coping with those changes a little later in the broadcast. The Houston Chronicle is reporting many colleges in Texas are switching to a pass-fail grading system for what would normally be the last semester of this academic year. On a more ominous note, the Chronicle also quotes the bow-tied vaccine researcher and COVID-19-era celebrity Dr. Peter Hotez of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine and co-director of the Texas Children's Hospital, as saying that with so many ties binding Houston to that other great coastal metropolis to its east, New Orleans, where the virus appears to have spread quite rapidly, the biggest city in Texas could be in the crosshairs for becoming the next hotspot for COVID-19. There are a lot of variables. Right now, the greatest number of cases in Texas are in Dallas County with more than 300. At least 5 people incarcerated there have tested positive for COVID-19, and that has some inmates and advocates sounding alarms statewide. Carrie Blakinger covers criminal justice for the news organization The Marshall Project. Carrie, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Why worry about people detained showing up with the virus? I mean, I think I can imagine some answers here, but walk us through the pitfalls that are inherent and how this might harm the public at large.
One of the concerns, of course, is that people in jail and prison tend not to get great medical care, and they often come in with high medical needs to begin with. But aside from that, I think it's really easy for people to sort of think that maybe this doesn't affect me because these are people who are incarcerated. But, you know, people that are incarcerated, there's still a lot of flow in and out of the community. If you're talking about the jail, you have, you know, people being released and booked every day. Mm-hmm. But even if you're talking about a state prison, you have thousands of guards who come in and out, you know, 3 shifts a day. There's a lot of, you know, flow in and out of our communities and our prisons. And if we see an outbreak in a prison or jail, it's, you know, going to continue to affect the community and the community health.
Well, I'm curious about how prisons or jails are equipped to deal with the spread of viruses because, of course, people get sick in jail. Obviously, pandemic is rare, but how well equipped or not are lockups in Texas?
I mean, on the one hand, they're used to having some amount of regular outbreak. If you look at websites for a lot of these corrections departments across the country, you'll see that somewhat regularly notices pop up that, you know, this unit or this dorm or this entire facility is on lockdown or doesn't have visitation because of, you know, mumps or flu or noroviruses. You know, that happens somewhat regularly. But when you're talking about something that is as contagious and as, you know, potentially fatal as something like a coronavirus here, that's something that's a lot harder to deal with, in part because there is no social distancing in prisons and jails. Like, you can do the best you can. You can try to sort of ask people to stay apart, but there's simply not space in a lot of these dorms. Case in point, the first case in TDCJ, in the Texas prison system, was in a dorm. The guy had been living in a 58-person dorm, so they put the whole dorm on medical restriction. But, you know, these are 57 other people that he would have been interacting with in close quarters 24/7.
Some people are advocating the release of some detainees. Once you've, though, identified coronavirus in a population, a prison population that's fairly dense, what's the wisdom of that and what is what's the best thinking on this question?
I think it's very similar to what it would be in the free world. The only difference is that in prison, you're not going to get adequate medical care. So, you know, in prison, even if someone's exposed and you might want to isolate them, it might be better to isolate them at home where potentially they can be isolated, potentially more isolated than you can be in prison, and they can actually have access to good medical care.
What about proactive steps that the prison system could take at this juncture, and are they taking any steps other than, for instance, locking down certain facilities where they've identified COVID-19?
I mean, I think it's really hard to take certain proactive steps in prisons. You know, a lot of prisons won't let inmates have access to things like hand sanitizer, and, you know, soap and water are questionable. Like, there's not often enough supplies. You know, as I said before, social distancing is really difficult. And beyond that, it's really hard to know what prisons do. And it's only going to get harder because as places actually need to be locked down more broadly, and as there's more restrictions and more medical isolation, that's going to decrease contact with the outside world. So prisoners may not be able to access the phones because they're in lockdown. You know, they might not be able to access the, you know, secure email system that some facilities use. So the more this progresses, it might be harder to figure out what's going on as it decreases communication.
Houston-based reporter Carrie Blakinger covers criminal justice for the news organization The Marshall Project. Carrie, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.